Today on Pilgrim Radio's His People, Wendy Cunningham on her journey from atheism to faith.
Well, first devastating part is that evolution is a theory and the Big Bang is a theory. And I had not recalled that key word being taught to me. You know, it was presented to me as scientific fact that was evidence-based. And in reality, that wasn't true at all. You know, as I started to investigate it, I realized, oh my gosh, this is just what people think happened. It's not actually observable. You know, all of the rules of science don't apply to evolution or the Big Bang or God.
Wendy Cunningham next. It's always fascinating to hear the incredibly varied ways in which the Lord leads people to Himself. Coming up today, Sonny Kane speaks with vlogger, entrepreneur, mother, and wife Wendy Cunningham about her book, What If You're Wrong? On her journey to faith from atheism.
Your journey from atheism to faith is such a powerful and personal one. Before we dive into that transformation, can you take us back to where you started? What was your belief system like growing up?
I think of myself as, in the very least, a third generation atheist. I don't know if it went beyond my grandmother, but my grandmother, who was a massive influence in my life, was an atheist, very vocally so. And then, of course, my mom, her daughter, followed in those footsteps. And then by the time I'm in the picture, there's no exposure at all to church, to stories from the Bible, to conversation about God. You know, so in so many ways, I was kind of a unique example of a true atheist. I think sometimes people claim atheism and really they're angry at God, or they're in rebellion at God, or they feel hurt by God. But I truly had no context for who this God could even be. And so, you know, as far as how it played into my life, it didn't. It was not the presence of something different than Christianity. It was the absence of anything theological in that regard.
Now, your book, What If You're Wrong, is built around this pivotal idea of questioning long-held beliefs. Was there a specific moment or conversation that first planted the seed of doubt about your atheism?
Gosh, I can't really point to a specific moment. It was kind of a series of conversations. You know, I had, like I said, very minimal exposure. I grew up in California. You can live your whole life in California and maybe never even hear of God. You know, it's very secular in that way. And so I had had just the briefest of encounters with Christians over my upbringing. And it, you know, it was nothing took root at all. Nothing struck me as potentially the truth until I met and started dating, who is now my husband. And I did not know he was a Christian, and perhaps that's his failing in some way, but he was different in a lot of ways that were supposed to be different as Christians. You know, he was very kind, very loyal, very patient, all the fruit of the Spirit. And he engaged me in a lot of conversations when we were dating. He was always very gentle and sweet as he just asked some probing questions, you know, as we were getting to know each other. I, on the other hand, was very antagonistic, defensive, and aggressive as I asked him questions or tried to answer his questions. But truthfully, over the course of, you know, the first year of our courtship, he started to erode this, I want to say, deeply held belief, but that's the problem. It wasn't, he exposed that my beliefs were not, in fact, deeply held at all. They were very shallow. And that was kind of the first thing that felt uncomfortable, I guess, for me, and sent me into, could I be wrong about this? Is this an area where I don't know as much as I think I know?
In one of the questions that your husband asked, in your book you wrote about this question, could you have been created, and how it sent you spinning. What was it about that that cracked open the door of belief for you?
I think that it was such a simple question, you know, and not something I had never thought about, but it was the way that he phrased it that felt inviting, because he didn't say, could you have been created by God, which I would have felt, you know, a little backed up against the wall. But he said, could you have been created just at all? And, you know, I remember thinking about it and not really having, you know, my initial response is that I wanted to say no. But he was invited me into just considering that. And possibly for the first time, I really did consider that. And it didn't seem like the most ridiculous idea. It seemed like, I mean, I guess I could have been created, when the alternative school of thought that I had held from my public school influence was, I came from the Big Bang. I'm a process, you know, from evolution. My ancestors crawled out of a pond somewhere and whatever. And as I was holding that against, could I have been created? They both sounded equally ridiculous. One not more than the other. And that was kind of the first time where I'm like, okay, I have always thought faith is ridiculous. But as I think about it, so is what I believe. It feels really ridiculous all of a sudden. And so that gave me just a moment of pause. And my instinct was, well, now what I need to do is go back and research evolution again as an adult, because, you know, you learn about this as like an eighth grader. So I'm like, now that I'm a grown person, I can go and really grab a hold of this in a different way. And then I can come back and prove that I'm, in fact, correct in what I believe. And he's wrong. I'm just grasping at articulating it well. So I'm like, I just need to research this better. And then I'm going to feel more confident.
You tell us a little bit about that journey, what that opened you up to.
Well, first devastating part is that evolution is a theory and the Big Bang is a theory. And I had not recalled that key word being taught to me. You know, it was presented to me as scientific fact that was evidence-based. And in reality, that wasn't true at all. You know, as I started to investigate it, I realized, oh my gosh, this is just what people think happened. It's not actually observable. You know, all of the rules of science don't apply to evolution or the Big Bang or God, right? Like, none of them are provable in the way that I felt I wanted to have that proof in my hand at that moment. And so that was really a little bit unraveling. Then I started to go into some details of, I remember there was these missing links I was taught about in school that really proved evolution. Where are they? And come to find out, a lot of those things 20 years before that I had been taught have since been disproven. But of course, they don't send that memo out to all the public school kids and say, hey, remember how we taught you that? Well, now we know that's not true. So I felt really misled. And again, I was grasping at something that wasn't there to hold on to. And then I'm like, well, what do I have now? I was really sad.
Where did you go from there?
Oh, that was kind of the part that went from, I'm a little bit confused and disappointed, to devastation. Because gosh, if everything I've built my life on is not correct, and I say built my life on, that feels a little like a larger statement than I mean it to be, but our worldview is foundational. We do really build our life into eternity on a foundation of either God is real or he is not real. And if I have built my life to this point on a foundation that is incorrect, whoa, I have to go back and rethink all my thoughts and reevaluate everything I thought I knew for sure. It just felt like everything was going to crumble. Because there is, even I as an atheist, I understand that if the Bible is true and if God is real, there is a consequence to not accepting that as truth. I knew that much. And so all of a sudden I felt like, oh my gosh, is it too far gone for me? Like, am I way too far down this path that I won't ever be able to understand what is true? And then, of course, you have my grandmother, who was my other parent, and that atheist voice in my life who I adored. She had already passed away. So what does that mean for her? And she was such an important part of my life. My mom, my sister, my cousins, my whole family. What does this mean for them if this is true? It only felt devastating. And I know we call it the good news of Jesus, but for a season, it felt really hard to digest and understand the weight of what that would mean for everything and everyone I knew.
I can imagine that was really unsettling. I'd love to rewind a little bit. You briefly mentioned your Grandma Ginny, and in the book, you share about her significance in your life and also how her death became a turning point for you.
Yeah, that was a wild experience because, you know, I was 17, getting ready to leave home for the first time, going to college. She had been sick for a long time. She had Lou Gehrig's disease. So, you know, lots of suffering. Again, these beg the questions of if there is a God, why is he doing this? You know, but as she was getting nearer to the end, she would make comments like, this is why people made up God, because as you get close to death, you want so desperately to believe that something else happens beyond this death, which of course, that was a very real experience I was having. I want to believe you're not just going to die and go into the dirt. And yet as she neared her death, she became more and more certain that that is exactly what was going to happen. She was just going to die and go into the dirt. Like, wow. Okay. And she held that to the very end and was able to, I don't know, have a peace as well, because she felt more and more confident that that is why God was made up. It was a trip. And because I was really experiencing what she said, when she did pass away, I almost became more convinced that God was not real, because she went so willingly into death without, quote unquote, falling for it. Like caving to the fairy tale of some afterlife, you know? And so I'm like, okay, I guess she just died. Wild.
Yeah, you said in your book that she was ready to go nowhere. What was happening in your mind with that thought?
I can't say there was comfort, because I really wanted to believe that cannot be it. But if she's sure and she's on the precipice, surely she'd be seeing the angels or something that's supposed to happen at the end here. And she's just not. And no, it didn't bring me comfort, but it brought me, I guess, conviction. Seems like a funny word to use, because that's typically of God. But yeah, I felt like, okay, I guess that's that. And we just die. And it's okay. It gave me a comfort in that she was okay with it. So I'm like, okay, it's okay to just die and it's over. But it felt confusing. It felt strange. And perhaps that was a seed that was planted that I just never watered until later. But I do remember reflecting back on it and going, that was weird that she just was like so ready to do what? Nothing.
Nothing. Okay, speaking of that nothingness, you describe a process of dismantling the lies that you had built your life on, which left you standing in nothingness. Can you talk about what that was like? Was it freeing? Was it terrifying? Was it both? And how did that emptiness lead you to start asking what else could be true?
Yeah, perhaps my story is not how everybody will process, you know, but in my case, it was not an exchange of beliefs. It was not, this is not true, and therefore this must be true. It was not that. It was, okay, this is not true, throw it away. Okay, this is not true, throw that away. I wasn't even searching for what was true just yet. I was too busy discovering all the things that were not true. And it just felt like, oh my gosh, you know, and I came to the end of this pile of discarded beliefs. It just felt like more lostness, which was becoming quite a theme for me in that season of my life. And with that, when you have nothing else, it was almost like I had nothing to lose. So, okay, tell me more about, why do you believe in God? You know, it was like there's now a, I guess freedom would be a word, although I probably wouldn't have used that word at the time. There was space, let's say. I'm willing to go, well, if I know now what I believe can't be true, I felt pretty convinced of that. What do you believe? Tell me that. Why do you believe that? How do you know that? Then we have this like long period of many, many, many questions, some very basic and some specific to his experience of his faith. And then some that are relevant to all Christians, you know, like how accurate is the Bible? What about the history books? Are we talking about this is the same level of accuracy as my understanding of the pyramids and Egypt type history, or not so much? Like, we don't have as many documents supporting the Bible. Where are we at with that? So it was now a time to start to investigate. And I wasn't willing to say what Tom believes is the truth. It was more a curiosity of, okay, what do you believe? And does this sound right to me? Does this sound logical? And that was important to me. It cannot be a leap of faith. I can't just go with you off a cliff and be like, well, I'll just take this leap now. I really want to walk there and understand it the whole way. I really needed that. And so, yeah, that was kind of the process moving forward, was collecting ideas of what could be true and sifting through to figure out how true they were.
How long was that process of you collecting these new ideas and deciding if they could possibly be true?
Yeah, it was over a course of a number of years. And then I think the first conversion was to be a theist, which I at the time thought was, oh, I'm now a Christian. And Tom's like, all you have come to is you believe there's a God. But at the time, I was like, no, this is it. I'm here. I have arrived here. So it is still a journey.
Can you think of a moment where you knew that Jesus and the Bible, that they were real and they were true?
And that's a very clear memory, a very clear moment in my head of, and just the most random also. It didn't happen in church or any specific moment. I don't know what led up to it. I can only remember being very pregnant with my first child and thinking very deeply about, I didn't know the gender, but I thought, if this is a girl, how do I stop her from floundering in the world in the way that I have? I just felt, oh gosh, there's got to be some divine guidance that I can tap into to make sure that I do it better, that I just give her some answers ahead of time, and just was really wrestling with that idea. So I'm very pregnant. My husband was a firefighter. We're now married. He's working. And I'm folding laundry like in the afternoon in my room and thinking these thoughts and just have, oh, it makes me emotional. This very real sense that the Holy Spirit had made himself known in that moment to me. I felt him as if he walked into the room, and I just immediately got on my knees and said out loud, I don't even know what to do right now. I don't know what to say. I don't know the right words. All of those insecurities that I think a lot of people wrestle with, like, I don't know how to pray appropriately, or I don't know, all of that is real, but that doesn't matter. And I knew that too, and just felt like, okay, I'm in for this. I'm in with you. I know that you're there. I feel that you're here. I understand that Jesus is a part of it. Like, I'm still learning, but I'm in for it. I am handing it over because I can't take another step into being a parent and, you know, all of this without you. I feel like that's what's gotten me so lost. And so that was a real pivot point, obviously. It still is in my heart. And when my husband came home from work the next day, I told him this and I proclaimed, now I'm a Christian. And that's when he was like, well, you're almost there. Yes, like you are. That's great. But like, there's still so much more and you're going to be even more convinced. So I do remember that moment, and it was all kind of lumped in together without a full understanding of all of the pieces that would come shortly thereafter.
And it's a journey of discovery that you are still on today. In your book, while discussing Christians' attempts to share their faith and how they can sometimes have the opposite effect, you made this striking statement that just jumped off the page. You said, every time I was introduced to God, I was sentenced to hell. Will you unpack that?
Yeah, I remember engaging as a very young believer on social media with people who were just spewing, you're going to hell if you're, you know, bullet point. And I'm like, gosh, that is not a very attractive bumper sticker for your faith. Really, it only brings further shame to whatever the person is, you know, there's a separation already between God and whoever you're trying to talk to. Why on earth would you lead with, well, you're going to hell if fill in the blank? That is not That's not how Jesus leads. That's not how he starts the conversation. Why is that where so many Christians default? It just drives a further wedge. And so I remember even, I wrote about this in the book, the Matthew Shepard case being on TV, and I'm dating myself a little bit here, but it was a boy that was killed by two men, and the defense they used in court was that he came on to them, and therefore they were justified in beating him to a place where he died. And there was so much, you're going to hell, Matthew is in hell, like all of this on the TV. Granted, it's the TV, but you know, we're influenced by these things. And at that point in my life, I was still very much not even close to being curious about God. And I just viewed it as like wildly judgmental and very hard-hearted and no empathy, no compassion. And I'm like, surely if there is a God, that cannot be who he is, because that is what I know very little about God as an atheist, is God is love, right? I know that he's supposed to be this loving, good father, like all of those things I understand from a distance. And that is not the picture I see when I experience that sort of damnation from Christians.
Now, is it helpful if somebody decides to help their non-believing friend by bringing a Bible verse or by bringing their experience of God? Are those things helpful?
They were not for me because I didn't believe in God. So I don't believe in the authority of his word. So a Bible verse is, I say in the book, like quoting the Little Mermaid, right? It holds about as much weight. And your experience, like I would hear people, oh, I hear from God and I pray and I feel him. And before I had this experience myself, I'm like, no, yeah, like for you, whatever's happening to you. But it just didn't, it was very personal to that person. And I'm like, I believe you feel something's happening. I just don't believe that it's God. And so those were not compelling ways to reach me because of where I was sitting in regards to, I have no context for these things. I have no understanding. They hold no weight. On the contrary, Tom is inviting me with, again, Jesus does this. He asks questions. And Tom knew the answers. He knew the answers. But Jesus doesn't tell. He asks, why don't you tell me the answer? And that's what Tom did. And it, again, it gave me the space to try to articulate my own belief, fail miserably at that. And then it became a two-way street of, instead of me being defensive and just trying to spout off answers to your questions, then it became, well, let me ask you questions about your faith, because he had, throughout the whole time that we were having these conversations over years, this unshakable confidence that he knew who God was, and that I was not going to be able to knock him off of that pedestal, if you will. Not that that wasn't my heart. I didn't want to knock him down, you know, but I knew I didn't have it, what he had. I didn't have the confidence, the unshakable faith, if you will. And he did. And I'm like, man, what on earth is that? So I think, honestly, that is the best thing a Christian can bring, is just a deeply rooted confidence in who God is, that doesn't inspire defensiveness. Tom never got defensive. He never got angry with me. And I would say things to him like, I know you think I'm going to hell. And just bait him. Just bait him into, I guess, neglecting some of his own theology. He never said to me, you're not going to hell. He never said those words. He said, I hope you're not going to hell, but that's not up to me. I don't want that for you. That's not what I think or hope. You know, he wasn't willing to just go, you're not going to hell. You're a good enough person. He wasn't going to come off of his theology, but he was kind and gentle as I berated him. And that's comes from him just being very rooted in what he believed. And that's what we can bring as Christians, is a deep rooted belief and confidence.
And when you say deep rooted belief and confidence, if somebody out there listening is having an awareness that maybe they, when it comes to these conversations with non-believers, they feel a little bit nervous about the answers that they might receive, or that their faith might not be as rooted, how can we get more rooted? What does that mean to you?
Yeah, well, I do feel it is a blessing that I came to faith as an adult, because I did have a desire to have a very logical process. And ask really good questions, as opposed to sitting in Sunday school. And I'm not trying to negate that this is a perfectly acceptable way to evangelize our children. But, you know, when you're just receiving, 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 and you don't have a chance to really engage in hard questions, then you have a possibly flimsy faith. And you'll know when you get into one of these conversations how flimsy your faith is or not. And I don't mean flimsy like you're going to bail on it, but flimsy like you don't have the answers for it. And the Bible says we're meant to give a defense. We're supposed to be able to answer these hard questions confidently. And here's the best part. The answers exist. They are there. And they are wildly compelling. Your faith as a Christian, if you dive into apologetics, if you start to look at things like A Case for Christ was really compelling to me, the mathematics of the probabilities of the prophecies being fulfilled in Jesus are stunning. When you look into these things, there's no way you're going to be shaken by a single question. Now, you might not be able to get the answers out. That takes practice. But you will have that confidence that my husband had. You'll know like you know, like you know, that the answers are there. And frankly, that's why I wanted to write the book, because when I got to the other side, I'm like, Christians need to be better equipped for these conversations. We just aren't. And Tom really was. And that mattered. That mattered for my salvation. And so in the book, I do write at the bottom of each chapter some reflection questions for you, the reader, probably a Christian. What are these answers for yourself? Because you need to know them for you, because someone important in your life is going to ask you. Your kids, grandkids, a neighbor, someone you care about is going to ask you these questions. And if you're not ready, it might matter in a bad way or in a good way. God partners with us in that way. You know, we're meant to be in fellowship, and we're part of his process of salvation for the world. It's part of the Great Commission. You know, we're supposed to be equipped. So be in the Bible, in the very least. Read the Bible all the time. It's always revealing new things to me. And study apologetics and study these things, because it'll be exciting to you. It won't be just like more work. It'll just set a fire that you'll not only be ready, you'll start talking. You'll start asking people hard questions and getting them to engage you.
You've been listening to His People on Pilgrim Radio. Many thanks to today's guest, Wendy Cunningham, author of What If You're Wrong? Coming up on tomorrow's program, it's Dee Cook on how Indigenous Ministries partners with local leaders and ministry teams in difficult access countries.
We have a ministry in Baghdad with one of the churches, national churches there, and they work with refugees, but they use Awanas quite a bit, as does two of our other programs in Egypt, to minister to the children and really help them with memorization and a good foundation for life in scriptures.
That's tomorrow at the same time right here on His People. Thanks for listening.